Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are joined by James Rapine from 92.3 The Fan. You'll want to stay around and listen to that, talking about the Cavs veterans, this weekend's games, and a whole bunch of other Cavsy things. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I'm enjoying the warm weather. The Cavs really dropped the ball in Dwayne Wade's retirement ceremony. It was a bad way to say goodbye to a Cavs legend as he gets retired in Miami. But how are you, buddy? How are you doing?
I got suckered into watching Pokemon Detective Pikachu today, which was an interesting movie that happened.
It's a kid's movie, so you got to keep that in mind.
The plot was wild. That's all I'm going to say. Some wild shit in that plot. But joining us today in on Pokemon Detective Pikachu moves is James Rapine, a host, a writer, a whole bunch of things over at 923 The Fan. You can also check out the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast that he hosts over there. You may have heard him hosting on Sunday, talking about the Cavs, Francisco Lindor, Tyson Fury, and being an advocate for leg day, which don't skip leg day, you cowards. James, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. You've been up around this team, I think, a little more than Evan and I have this year, just kind of following at the arena a little more. Evan and I usually kind of make it on the weekends. But James, for you this season, just kind of covering it, what has it been like just seeing how it's all unfolded? Like, for you, from your perspective, what has it just kind of felt like watching this Cavs team get to where it's at right now?
I think there's been more drama around a just awful team, you know, a lottery team, arguably the worst team, and certainly the worst team in the East. More drama than I could have ever imagined. They're about what I expected record-wise, you know, 15 wins at this stage. I had them at 21. I still think that they could be right around that at the end of the year. But, man, it's just been storyline after storyline, from Kevin Love wanting to be traded to his temper tantrum. And a lot of it is, it at least appears, self-inflicted. You know, with different veterans or with the way the roster construction has gone, hiring a college coach that was 67 years old, 66 at the time, and he didn't adapt right. So I think that there's, and obviously we'll dive into it, but the shock isn't the record. It's not the development. It's not that Garland at times has struggled or Kevin Porter Jr. has shown flashes, or even Colin Sexton, whatever you think about him. I think everyone's kind of where you thought they'd be. The surprise is the amount of storylines that have been around this team from the get-go, and it's a credit to them because they've kept us busy in the media despite being an awful team.
James, my question for you is then, since you're like, we're all around this team, but obviously you're a lot closer to it, is where do you think the core and root of this problem lies with? Like, this is a bit of the problem last year, too. The Cavs were pretty bad, and just they kept making the headlines for all the wrong reasons, and I just don't know how they can get out of their own way. And I guess Chris and I have varying opinions on this. It's a day-to-day thing where something bothers me or gets me grumpy. But in your opinion, where do you think just this issue in itself is just the Cavs being the Cavs is rooted at?
Yeah, I think it's at the top because you look, I mean, six coaches in 7 years, and I know that's part of the four straight finals runs, but they're a dysfunctional franchise. They are poorly run. They are a dumpster fire. Like, whatever you want to say, that's what they are. And there's no reason to hold back. I've written it. I've said it a bunch, and it's true. You know, they've had four coaches in 16 months now. That's wild for assistants. The assistant coach turnover, that would be an insane amount. When you have that as your head coach, four different ones, that shows you where they're at as an organization. So, no, I point at Dan Gilbert, and here's why. If you look at the post-LeBron Cavs and where it went wrong, you go to the year prior to LeBron leaving, and it starts with that Kyrie trade. And he was unwilling, based on what I've heard, to keep Kyrie around. And I don't know about you guys, but at the time, even at the time, even though on paper it looked great with Isaiah Thomas and this potential pick and Jay Crowder and all these things, well, if they're trading Isaiah Thomas, then it's probably clear that he's not, you know, not the all-star, not the MVP candidate that he was just a few months prior because of injury. And that was the case, right? And we haven't seen Isaiah Thomas reach anywhere near that level since. So I think that set them back. And then just, you know, a couple months later, the Kevin Love extension. And I'm getting it backwards. But the Kevin Love extension, or the next offseason, excuse me, the Kevin Love extension was ridiculous too, because he was an asset that you could have traded that offseason and kind of helped reboot this franchise. And instead they held on, like, oh, we are not going to go into tank mode. And I think that was Dan Gilbert led. I think he backed Kobe and Ty Lue butting heads. Well, now you just let the coach, the best coach you were going to get, walk out the door. So it's just been one bad decision after another in the grand scheme of things, from not getting what you needed to get for Kyrie, having bad lottery luck certainly plays into that, I'll be fair. But overall, I think this starts at the top with Dan Gilbert.
Yeah, I think there's unanswerable questions about some of that, just because we know Dan has not been around as much the last several months. Like, I think there's just a lot of unknowns to that. Now, but I think the track record would tell you that Dan's pretty involved. That's just unavoidable. I think we know that, like, this is a man and an organization that, like, I think overall wants to prove it can do stuff without LeBron, which I think is, you know, understandable. But it hasn't worked out well. And to look at the micro, these last two games have been kind of interesting, and I think kind of a microcosm of where the Cavs are at. So they win on Friday, come back from the All-Star break, pick up, I think, their second win in a row, which was, like, kind of surprising against a bad Wizards team, but won a very weird game where Kevin Love didn't play all that well, and they kind of got really good games from Colin Sexton, and Kevin Porter Jr. played well before getting ejected, and Jetty had a really good game. And then you get to Saturday, and then although Kevin Love is out with an Achilles injury and the Heat don't have Jimmy Butler, they absolutely got played off the floor in that game, with, I think, some stuff we'll get into about Andre Drummond kind of popping up a little bit. But I think it's, to me right now, when I look at this, they're clearly pretty bad. I don't know if there's, like, a direct fix for them in the short term. The Drummond thing is clearly, like, a bet on talent more than anything else, more than, like, a fit or a missing piece or whatever. I look at just the overall body of work of these last couple of years, and I look at these games, and I just look at how things are playing out, and there's only, like, a couple things I think you feel sort of particularly strongly that they're good. And you look at these games, and it's like, some of the stuff feels sort of empty because these are just sort of non-competitive games to some degree, and you're looking for little moments, and that's sort of what you're banking on and the winning out of the end. But it's like, we were talking about this before we got on. It's like, yes, the minutia matters, like all that stuff matters, but the big picture stuff about where this team is sort of is, where the franchise is, where they're sort of headed, I think ends up just being like a more interesting reality. And it's just sort of envisioning like what that is amid the crap now ends up mattering in like 2 years or whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's really hard to look at this team and say, okay, that is a foundation piece, right? I was listening to a national podcast earlier, so the Hoop Collective, with Brian Windhorst, and I think it was Tim McMahon, who was like, is Colin Sexton really a foundational piece? Like, is he the guy, like, a guy you're building around? And that's a real question. And I know people have their questions about Darius Garland. I like him, and I like his game. At the same time, he is a 6'1" guard, you know, in a league that is big, it's physical, and it's athletic. And I think he's an average athlete. I do love his instincts. I like parts about his game, but there's certainly concerns there. Just this, honestly, guys, this roster is just so weird, because it's this mix of young, old, the old guy, you know, Kevin Love now dealing with an Achilles, and that was one of the many reasons why I would have taken pennies on the dollar for him and just a couple of contracts at the deadline. Kobe Altman certainly feels differently. And it's just, it feels like it's stuck. And they blame lottery or the lack of lottery luck. I know that's certainly something that'll be mentioned at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, or if you mention, talk to anybody with the Cavs. But you still have to overcome that. And you still have to build some kind of culture. And I think the Heat, really, anytime they've played them this year, you know, Beeline, and then obviously yesterday with JB Bickerstaff, it was that. It's like, man, they are. they're a force. You know, they have that culture. They have that confidence about them, even though, even without a Jimmy Butler. You know, there was no stars in a Heat uniform on Saturday night, and yet look at what they did. And that's just, that's how they play, and that culture starts at the top. And so from a broad perspective, I guess, it is hard to look at this and say, all right, well, this guy's going to be an all-star, and this guy's going to be certainly a big role player on our team the next time we get to the playoffs. I don't know if anybody in the Cavs organization could say that. And so outside looking in, it's tough to be optimistic. But I will say Garland's young. You know, Colin Sexton is extremely young, and I think Garland has a higher ceiling, but other people feel differently. Kevin Porter Jr., the youngest of the three, and he certainly flashed this year. Do we need to see more of him? Yeah, I think he struggled a bit, though, against the Heat and even in Washington on Friday. So we'll see what happens here over the final 26 games. But there isn't a ton of optimism. And the crazy part of it is, guys, a year ago, if they would have gotten the top pick, all of the optimism would have went. Like, even the second pick, it would have been like, okay, here's how we reboot the franchise. If they get the top pick this year, I don't think anyone's going to say, all right, this is our meal ticket. This is our chance to reboot the franchise. Because I'm not sure there is that player in this draft, at least on the surface. So that concern isn't going away anytime soon.
I guess, I think Kobe's, and I've been on the record saying this a few times, I feel like Kobe and his staff and the Cavaliers as a whole hit a lot of singles in the draft with Garland and Sexton, and then Osmond was a sneaky good surprise in the second round. And I think Kevin Porter, like you said, has the most potential and is the youngest out of all these young guys. And you get him at 30th overall, like, you take that every chance you get. But like you said, yeah, no, Anthony Edwards has the potential to be a star-ish player in this draft, but it's such an underwhelming class. Do you think the Cavs can afford to maybe just hit another single, even if they get like a top five pick and they get a solid role player that they can build around with, and then either hope through free agency or the draft, the next year's following draft, and hit a home run player then? But do you think they can afford to keep waiting this long, or is it just going to blow up in their face in spectacular fashion?
I mean, potentially. Here's the thing is, it's fine if you hit singles as long as you have the right culture in place. Mm. So I think the part of the reason Garland has struggled this year certainly is, you know, he played 4.5 games at Vanderbilt, but that was probably the highest ceiling player you could get at five. Like, maybe you could argue Jackson Hayes, but it's a guard league. Darius Garland was highly talented. He was considered the number one point guard on NFL draft boards the year prior, right? So going into that college basketball season, obviously John Morant overtook that and showed why, and is showing why in the NBA. But he was considered an extremely high-end prospect. So I think that wasn't a play to make a single or hit a single. I like the pick. I still do. But you're right. Like, at some point, you need to hit it big with one of these guys. And maybe that is Kevin Porter Jr. You know, maybe he ends up being Jimmy Butler. You know, if it does and that works out, then fine. But it doesn't help you right now when he's 19 years old and a guy trying to make it here. So I'm with you. I do think, though, that they will be, hopefully, for their case, in a good position to get another player that could contribute right away. And here's the thing about Kobe Altman. A lot of these picks, Colin Sexton, yeah, you can argue Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but would you take him over Kevin Knox? I know that was a debate. I would take Colin Sexton over Knox at this
point.
No question. I get the size thing and all that. But I would take Sexton. Like, they were eighth overall. What would you really? Is Culver killing it in Minnesota right now? No. And I get we saw him in the tournament, and everyone loved him there. But I like Garland's ceiling, and I still do. So a lot of these picks make sense on the surface. So I won't rip Kobe there. I just think that situation matters so much, and not trading Kevin Love out of almost pride of getting more has hurt him right now as a GM, and I think it's put him in danger to an extent. Not trading Tristan Thompson is certainly something that I would have done, and I get it. He busts his ass night in and night out. But a lot of that leadership stuff that you see on the surface clearly wasn't there in the locker room, or the coach wouldn't have quit after 54 games. And we can get into that for more of that. But, yes. But there's just a lot there. I think Kobe Altman, I think the pressure is on him, whether it's the draft or free agency. And I think that's kind of probably why he made this play for Andre Drummond to start showing signs of improvement here because if he doesn't, he will not survive. And I know he just got an extension, but he will not survive here in Cleveland through this rebuild. I don't see it happening unless they show market improvement in the near future.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, we're going to wrap up this first segment on a question. I just want to get your guys' instant reaction to this question I'm going to ask you. Just give me a name and we'll go from there. If you're going to look ahead 5 years from now, I'm stealing this from somebody, but I don't remember who, someone on Twitter, in that abyss. Who is the best player on the Cavs in 5 years? Kevin Porter Jr., Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, or a to-be-drafted rookie? Who is your guys' answer?
You starting with me? I would go with a to-be-drafted rookie.
I would go with the same, and thank God you gave me options, because if you had to make me pick from the entire roster, I would have felt I'd be sitting here for a little bit. So yeah, I'd go with a to-be-drafted rookie, and with an outside chance of Kevin Porter Jr. breaking that.
I would say Darius Garland, by the way, of the current players. I still think Darius has a really high upside that the players see that we don't necessarily see night in and night out.
I'd agree with that. My answer is still the to-be-drafted rookie, depending on, there's a lot of unknown in that, but I think if it is one of the guys, I think based on the body of work this year, I think my answer would probably be KPJ, but that's somewhat because I think year two will tell us a lot about what Garland is more than this year has. I think there's just a lot of, like, he probably hasn't been talked about enough in the context of everything that's been going on, and maybe that's good for him. But I think there's a lot we don't know yet, and I feel like year two is going to be where we kind of learn some of the about him once he has had a year to kind of get back on the flow of things. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then come back to talk about the veterans and what they are and are not doing on this Cavs team. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Like, will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Well, Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your shortlist of applicants fast. Also add skills tests to your job post so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. Their library of more than 50 skill tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make your hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you are making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/LockedOn in all caps and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/LockedOn. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. All right, Evan and I are back with James Rapine from 92.3 The Fan. James, you and I have both written about this in the last week or so, and I think Evan and I have talked about it, and I think it's just sort of an unspoken-ish truth among the general Cavs kind of dialogue right now. The veterans have not been doing a ton to sort of help these things. Now, for me, I think a lot of that goes to Kevin Love. I think that to me was what my column was about, is I think they need more from Kevin in a lot of ways. I think in terms of locker room leadership, I think Tristan at least has been doing that. I think Larry isn't going to ever be a cancer in any way. Like, those are guys who are both going to contribute, I think, more positively to the locker room, and not have like 90. It feels like that. Like, when I was running through the Kevin Love incident this year, there was more than I remembered, and there was like one for Tristan. It's a group of veterans that I think certainly did mesh with Beeline, but I think certainly, and this does include Drummond now, does need to kind of help elevate things the rest of the way. And just kind of looking at it, it's pretty obvious how Kevin and Tristan and these guys have sort of failed, but to you, what are the things you would want to see from Kevin, Tristan, whomever, the other vets you want to lean on the rest of the way to kind of at least somewhat improve things before this year's done in the first stint of what we assume is the beginning of the JB Bickerstaff era?
Oh, man. I honestly, I don't know if it can be salvaged. I'll start there. Like to me, we all work in, I don't know about you guys, I'm not the boss at my work, so I'm at my job. So
nope.
All right, and most of your listeners can relate to this. If someone went off and disrespected the boss, and then the boss's boss, and was consistently showing a lack of disrespect, and it was one of the veterans in your company and you were new, it's hard for that person to suddenly become a leader, right? Other than they've been there the longest and they have more pelts on the wall. And I think that's kind of where the Cavs are at. When you look at Kevin Love, and this is Kevin Love specific, I think the only thing he can do is just come to work every day, work, and kind of play it out and show really what he needs to do is show the league that he's still an elite player, you know, and say, hey, which he's not, but have that mindset. The final 26 games, I'm going to be a stud. I'm going to show I can be a 6-, 7-, 8-time All-Star, not just a 5-time All-Star that I am now. So that needs to be his mindset. That's how he can help the Cavaliers the most. But from a leadership standpoint, I don't think he can do anything. Now, Tristan is different because the damage is already done. I think he indirectly was in on the Beeline stuff. But moving forward, how can he help? Well, really just doing what he's doing. Work extremely hard, which he does. His locker is right next to Darius's, I believe, or really close to it. So he'll talk to Darius after the game. Heck, the other day we talked about Darius.
Pretty clutch.
Just a second ago. Yeah, absolutely. And that could be part of it. But he was like, yeah, dude, I think Darius, he reminds me of a young Dame. And I remember saying that to someone and they rolled their eyes. But I think if I see a missing thing in Darius, it's that aggressiveness. And maybe Tristan can get that out of him here going into year two. Because he still seems kind of unsure of himself at times from a personal standpoint. Should I shoot this? Should I not? Even though he has the physical ability to do so, right? So I think that would be the best thing for Tristan because he's going to be elsewhere. Love is going to be elsewhere. And outside of these guys just kind of playing through it, I think the damage from a leadership perspective, whether the Cavaliers like it or not, is already done for better or worse.
Did you guys see the quote that Darius had per Fred Katz of The Athletic the other day about him being the leader of the organization,
yes,
being a leader in locker room?
I loved it.
I loved it. And I'm shocked he said that.
Me too.
Because that's not him. You guys have seen him. Like
he's so quiet.
Mannered.
He's so quiet.
Yeah, and I just think he's still feeling himself out, and that's why I tell people like, all right, because I remember talking to people before the draft. No one knew who the hell Darius Garland was. I'm not going to pretend that I watched 4.5 games of Vanderbilt basketball and suddenly got high on Darius Garland. But I talk to people who pay attention to the top college recruits, top high school recruits going to college in the country, and they're like, man, Darius Garland was such a stud. Like, you don't understand. He's a baller. He's going to get there. This would be a good fit regardless of what they have on the roster. And that's when I started to become aware. And then you hear about his workout with the Cavs. And by the way, he had that same exact effect where he's just drilling threes and had a great workout with the Lakers. And so I think that potential's there. And hopefully he has that dog in him because I think that's the one thing people are wondering about with him that they don't wonder about Colin Sexton. And if he's like, hey, I'm a leader, I could see that. I could see him developing into that. And that's something that would be good to see. So when I read that quote, I was pleasantly surprised.
I was really happy to see it too. And like Chris just said, I was shocked because he's such a quiet and soft-spoken kid. But from what I've been told by players on the team and like coaches, like he's super confident in his abilities, but like he's still trying to feel out like the pecking order and everything, and I think he's trying to listen, and maybe he finally is just starting to figure out and find his voice, which is a great thing. And like you said, if Tristan Thompson can squeeze a little bit of that out of him before he's out of Cleveland, like that's going to definitely help the Cavs build this quote-unquote culture that they've been striving for since the almost 2 years since LeBron left town.
And really, I mean, honestly, they've been trying to quote-unquote build a culture since like LeBron left the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said it multiple times this week. Like their culture has been LeBron James since 2002. When yep. It was loose for LeBron, and then we have LeBron, and then he leaves in 2010. We don't have LeBron, and then LeBron is back, and now LeBron is gone. Like it's just been since 2002, you know? So yeah, they need to find a way to establish it. And honestly, the best makeup, the best way to hide a dysfunctional organization, we saw it with LeBron, is you find an all-star, you find a really good player. And like I said, I still think Darius can be that if you're looking at a player on this roster. Him and Kevin Porter Jr. get me the most excited long-term. And maybe that is – he is the guy because, again, 4.5 games at Vanderbilt, he didn't play in the summer league. That's hard to do. Heck, he was a little puffy in training camp. I know you guys saw him then. mm-hmm. a little puffy, and now yep. he's thin, he's leaned out, and an off season full of work and weights and things like that. I think that he could end up developing into a leader. But the key to that, guys, is getting rid of these veterans and moving forward with a young nucleus that is willing to learn, willing to work, willing to grind, not going to complain or whine if film sessions last a little longer than normal, right? Like, they're going to mm-hmm. be able to put in the time, because that's the key here. That's the culture you want to build, is with a young nucleus that obviously has talent but is willing to put the work in.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Evan. Sorry.
I guess, like, Kevin talked about it after John Beilein was formally resigned with the team, and he was quote-unquote reassigned to a different role within the organization. And Kevin Love touched on the fact that he and JB have had a pretty long-standing relationship, and Chris was talking about the quote he dropped about how JB Bickerstaff is kind of like a coach like Tyronn Lue, who commands respects and he works well with personalities. Do you think that that should be an objective of JB in his last 28 games? Because that's a legitimate fear where, like you have, like you said, you have a veteran like Kevin Love who blows up on Kobe Altman, who blows up on John Beilein, and these younger guys watch him get away with it, and they kind of think, like, well, maybe this is the norm. If I'm going to be here long-term, I can get away with whatever I want to, or start acting like an ass like that. Do you think, like, JB can seize on this veteran respect and hopefully regain some normalcy so that when these guys are gone, that this doesn't really become a problem going forward for them? Because that's a concern I've always had, is like, you have these veteran guys and then it trickles down to the younger players. And then if the veterans don't respect you, clearly your younger guys aren't going to respect the coach either.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point and fair concern, because once you set that precedent, well, then if he can do it, I can do it. You know, if he's going to throw a temper tantrum, I can throw a temper tantrum. If he's not going to like these film sessions, I'm not going to like them. And obviously, where do you think that came from? You think Darius Garland knew how long an NBA film session was before he was in one? I would doubt it. You know, I mean, Colin Sexton, he has the nerve to whine and bitch and moan about how long practices can be and fundamentals. Well, guess what, Colin? No, you better not have the nerve. If not, you have to run 10 suicides. You know, I think part of that comes from Kevin rolling his eyes on day one. I think that comes from Tristan Thompson. As much of as we want to call him a leader, he could have checked Kevin. There's the one person on that team that could have told Kevin off, essentially, and said, hey, you're either with us or you're not. But he wasn't all in either. All right, Tristan Thompson, it's real easy in a contract year to go out and get yours. And I not trying to rip him here, but I think that was part of it, is I'm going to get my numbers. I'm going to be the good guy. I'm not going to cause friction. If I get traded at the deadline, I do, but I can see the end in sight here, and I'm not going to be here to have to worry about it. And Love doesn't have that, so he acted out. So, but I will say, with JB Bickerstaff, I do think there's a respect factor there. Kevin worked with him in Minnesota. Tristan the other day talked about him and seemed to respect him, and I do think he can guide them safely without any blowups or any more drama to the end of the year, at least outside drama. We'll see, you know, public drama. Because what are you going to complain about now? The players won. You know, they won. John Beilein is out. There's you guys aren't good. Like, Kevin isn't that good anymore. He's compared to what he used to be. He's just not that guy. And if he is, he hasn't showed it this year consistently. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I think Tristan, he's more focused on getting his numbers and kind of getting to free agency healthy. And so he'll go through the right motion, say the right things. He's professional enough to do that.
Yeah, I think there is something to, like, that being something that, like, I don't want to say that is, like, exactly what I would want as a media member, because, like, I like when I know things. Like, I don't want to be out in the cold on these things, you know? That's not, like, what I'm saying. But I think, like, if you're the Cavs, like, you sort of, if you don't, I think it stems, like, beyond the coaching, beyond, like, the guys, like, wanting to do it. It just is, like, if they're, the guys don't, like, believe that the organization, like, sort of is doing things in a way that is at least, like, above board, like, this, you know what I mean? This doesn't seem to hit. Like, it happened in Sacramento. This stuff has, like, sort of gotten out in Sacramento, but, like, look at Charlotte. Charlotte is, like, mm-hmm. not a good team, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, like, a franchise, you know. I think it's, like, picking between, like, a rotten apple and a busted orange, but if you want to, like, compare these two situations. Like, neither of them are very good. You know, like, they have, like, what, one more Rising Stars player? Two more? Whatever. They, like, don't have, you don't have, like, Nick Batum, like, throwing fits, or, like, like the Charlotte Hornets are just not in there. And I think you like want that. And I think when like things are just melting down so rapidly, I think it says like to me almost more about the organization and then believe like the Beeline thing is they tried to do it, I think, in a way and try to spin it in a way that it was going to come in and be natural. But like clearly something with that, like, just never was going to work. And I think there probably is some validity to just like them not really like ever having like a genuine connection. Like we were talking about this before, but there's a Tristan quote from this week where it's basically like, if you're going to be a head coach now, you need to relate to the guys. You need to like have actual relationship with them. And I think like you probably have that in other situations. Other coaches have talked about that. If you hear them talk about that, it's something they go out and do. I don't really get the vibe that that was like a Beeline thing. I know him and Larry at least kind of got along, but I don't know if like he ever was able to establish like a real rapport with those guys. And if that doesn't happen, like I don't know what you're supposed to do other than how it happened. You know, like I think if he would have just stuck it out, like you have to fire him anyway. And I think at least with Bickerstaff, the hope is that, and the early indications would be that that's not really going to be a problem there. It just, you know, the rest of the stuff is an open question, but at least like you're not going to have, I think the accountability stuff probably holds a little bit true there, because they did practice like for a decent amount of time that first day he was head coach, and there wasn't like, you know, any leaks about how they were already annoyed about it or anything.
Yeah, I think that when you look at it, Beeline didn't have, and this should have been asked, like this is the thing, it should have been asked in the interview process, and it should have been thoroughly thought about, hey, what happens when these players don't respond to you and Kevin Love says you're a college coach and tells you to go F off? Like that, because that was a scenario that could happen. So they should have talked about it. And it should have been such a thorough thing with Beeline to where if this happened, if they had a plan as an organization, you know, because if you're going to bring someone in like that, and I was kind of a fan of the hire. I thought it made sense for a variety of reasons. You're going to have this young team that you're going to try to build and develop, and he has done that. He wants to make the leap to the NBA. And I assumed he was more prepared than he was. All right, if they don't respond to me, this is what I'm going to do. This is already how I'm going to make adjustments going into the league. I'm not going to be surprised by lack of practice time. That's such a simple thing. Of course, the lack of practice time is going to be something you have to adjust to. And a guy like Kevin Love isn't going to play on back-to-backs. Like, just basic things that was reportedly surprising to Beeline. You know, like we saw that in the preseason, right? I mean, there was a preseason game, I forget which one, where he came in there and it looked like he was I don't want to say about the cry, but he was bothered and upset. And I'm like, what is he, like, what's going on with him? And he was caught off guard by some of this. So that part's on John. And I think part of it's on the organization, because if you hire someone like that who doesn't have NBA experience, you have to have that in place. You know, you have to have that plan, that backup to the backup to the backup plan. If everything goes wrong, all right, let's break the glass. Let's go to this route, because we knew that this situation, this scenario could happen. And I think this really happens to anyone in a high-profile job. You need to have multiple plans in case certain things don't go right. And it didn't seem like he did, and he couldn't get out of it. And I think it's a lot on Kevin Love, who knew it, who never embraced him, literally from day one. Was someone that was difficult, rolling his eyes, I've been told, and having issues with him, you know? So that part, though, is on Kobe. As for moving forward, I'm with you. I think J.B. Bickerstaff, I think it will be the players, at least the veterans, will say, oh, we won, we'll run like an NBA team again, and they will be, I don't know about happy, but, you know, excited to almost get their way down the stretch here with only 26 games to go.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, we're going to take one last break and then come back with more with James Rapine from 92.3. Stay tuned. All right, we're back. Evan, you lead us off here. What is just something you want to pick James's brain about here?
Actually, I'm just kind of curious from the last segment. At the time, it's been a mixed report at this point. Like, do you think Beeline was a Dan Gilbert hire over a Kobe hire? Because I feel like it just kind of adds up. Because like some people say, like, oh no, this is a Kobe Altman decision. But he was reportedly interviewing assistants from Denver and Utah at the time, and I think Portland as well. And then like they just Dan reportedly sat down with Beeline and said, this is the guy who I want. And it's no secret at this point that Dan has always wanted a college guy to coach his team, but. Do you think that maybe this was a Dan hire or is this a Kobe hire? And I guess that's where I'm just curious where your thoughts are, because Chris and I have gone back on this before.
I think they were both in on it. I think this is maybe one of the rare times where they were both comfortable, confident, and ready to go this route. And part of that probably had to do with Tierney Bickerstaff also being willing to come along. You know, but it's one of those things where I don't think it was Dan just going off script. Even though Beilein didn't fit the profile of everybody else they were interviewing, he was certainly the outlier during that process. But I think Kobe was comfortable with it. You know, I mean, I heard him talk, you know, on and off the record and seem excited, genuinely excited about John Beilein coming to Cleveland. And I got it. I understood it. But again, I mean, I'm just shocked by how unprepared he was, how unprepared the organization was for this to happen. Like, if you're keeping Kevin Love around, like, Kobe knew Kevin wanted out last summer. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. That's not some made-up thing. Probably even before that, but certainly last summer, you know, after he came back and shown he was at least semi-healthy. So this idea – sorry, my dog likes to bark. He's upset at Kobe Altman too. This idea that he's, you know, been put in a tough position, and Dan Gilbert forced it, and that's where it went. He went with the big name. I don't buy it. I think Kobe was more in it than that. But could Dan have led the charge here? Maybe. I mean, it's certainly possible. I wouldn't put it past Dan Gilbert, but no, I think Kobe Altman was comfortable with the John Beilein hire.
Yeah, I think that's true, because I think there is some like reporting that Kobe was out like interviewing guys in Denver when Dan met with John Beilein, and like that's sort of how that got fast tracked. Like, I believe, I could be wrong, so if I'm wrong, just ignore what I'm saying here. But I'm pretty sure that's like some of the timeline that's out there. I don't think Bickerstaff would like we know he did well in the hiring process. He would not have been the kind of coach I thought they would have went after. Although it's like, if you're going to do this, like, why not just make it work with Ty? You know, that's like one of the unanswerable question with this. It's like Ty, you know, maybe like there's a lot of just weirdness with that.
Let me ask you a question, guys. Would you rather have Kobe Altman or Ty Lue right now?
Ty Lue.
I'd rather have paid David Griffin and kept Ty Lue and just had organizational stability.
Well, but that's the thing is, yeah, you're right. I mean, you move on from the GM who is capable of getting the most for Kyrie, if that route would have went and you would have taken that route. You move on from a GM that is well-respected and is already light years ahead of you, and part of that is just through luck, but light years ahead of you in the rebuild process in New Orleans. And now you move on from a coach, a championship coach, for who? Four different coaches. You know, he's the first of four different coaches in 16 months. Because your GM and him, one of the many reasons, but because your GM and him didn't get along, well, that doesn't work, you know? So, I agree with you. I think that Ty Lue, letting him go is going to be a mistake, especially when he gets a head coaching job. We'll see where, but when he gets a head coaching job, and heck, if he accepted a three-year deal with the Lakers, you'd be watching him at least in the Western Conference Finals this year. Yeah. So the fact that didn't happen at least saves Cavs fans a year from watching Ty Lue coach well on the sidelines and coach a good team.
Yeah, I'll just say, I think the Cavs need to just get to a place where they need to be competent before they have aspirations of like doing something grand again. And I think like stability with Griff, who's like the only guy who I've ever, who he has the best of, and I haven't talked to like a ton of GMs, but just in terms of a guy that I actually believe some of the stuff he says about culture and establishing it, he just actually presents some of that stuff is so genuine. Whereas like Kobe Altman comes across as like a Goldman Sachs trader. You know, like this is a man who like did do a presentation at Goldman Sachs, like just for the record, but like it doesn't come across as like as sincere and like, no. like part of his core as it does with Griff. And I think they're like, you can, it's hard to fake that stuff.
We're looking for a cultural driver statement that he said 52 times.
I mean, I do, but I don't.
Driver.
I don't know if it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think no, it I is, it. But when he I calls the team a tech company, that tells me a lot. Like, there's literally a bit. I've linked it before. Like, you can find it on YouTube. It's pretty easy. Just Google Kobe Altman Goldman Sachs. It's one of the most. Frankly, it is maybe the most illuminating thing he's ever said, considering he doesn't talk to us very much.
No, that's the other nice thing with Griff is he was comfortable talking to the media at a regular basis.
Yeah,
love is Kobe missing? Oh. By the way, he still hasn't talked. You know, is he going to talk soon, or is he? What are you doing? Out scouting?
Couldn't believe what he didn't talk in media day, Korea? To be honest with you. Couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, okay.
It'll just be today.
John Dorsey, who didn't like talking to the media, like even spoke on media day and like every so often.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy to think about. I mean, well, so the last time, I'm trying to think, the last time he saw you, John Beilein getting hired, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he did that conference call after the Drummond trade, but the last time in person was probably the Beilein hire, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, the conference call. I was on that. I should have remembered that.
Yeah, but that's like different. It's a little, it's different in person and whatnot. Okay, last thing, James, to kind of wrap up here. We've talked about him a little bit, but what have you made of Drummond so far? What has stood out to you either positively or negatively about him in his like what three, four games so far?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think they know. This is mean, but I don't think they know. They don't have a plan.
I agree.
They need they have a backup plan to the backup plan. Well, here with Andre Drummond, it was, I think I can acquire this two-time All-Star. He doesn't necessarily fit with our roster, but if we move Tristan with a before the deadline, or since we didn't, if we move him this offseason or he signs elsewhere, and we move Kevin Love, then he might fit. And he's 26 and he's young and he's overpaid, but hey, let's bring him in. And that's just kind of how it felt. And I do think he fits, and I like that it was, you know, a free big man. But you got to use him right, you know, You got to use him. The way I would use him, and the reason he's here, because it could be very temporary. Heck, he could opt out and sign a long-term extension. It's a poor free agent class. Who knows? Maybe he'll do that elsewhere, right? You know, it's not a long-term contract elsewhere. Fine. But use him for these 30 games that he was going to be here, now 26 games, to get the most out of Colin, to get the most out of Darius, and really put those guys in a position to play with a really talented guy. I mean, Andre Drummond's much more athletic than a Tristan Thompson. He plays above the rim. He does things that these other guys, these other front court players can't do. So use that in the pick and roll. Use that down low. Use that to the young guard's benefit, because even if he's here for only 30 games, and I think it could potentially be more than that, but even if it's 30, at least it's part of the rebuild in helping you move forward. And as of now, I just think he's just kind of here. And that isn't good. He needs to be a part of it, even if it ends up being a small part of the rebuild, by helping Darius, by helping Colin Sexton, because the more talented players you play with, the more you learn, the better you become. And I know that seems kind of small, kind of simple, basic, but I do think that that's where he can help them, even if it's for just the rest of the year.
Evan, what about you? Where are you at on Drummond, particularly for these last couple games?
I agree with James. It does come across as like mean, but I don't know what the Cavs are doing with him. I mean, like, I get it. Maybe there's only 48 minutes you can allocate between minutes. And against Washington, Tristan finished with 26 minutes. Drummond finished with 22. And I did tweet out the fact that, like, Kevin Love only played 23 minutes that night. JB Bickerstaff stuck with Larry Nance Jr. and Tristan Thompson, the two hot hands down the stretch. Like, that's the right call. But there's just a lot of weird stuff the Cavs are letting Drummond do. Like, I get it. Like, him, Larry, and Tristan practice three-pointers in practice, but maybe you shouldn't be encouraging him to, like, find and look those shots. You shouldn't be encouraging. Like, I get, like, he wants to show off that he can pass. He can bring the ball up. He can do all these other things. But, no, he should be, like James said, like, try and utilize him best in a situation where you can help develop Colin Sexton and Darius Garland both as comfortable in the pick-and-roll situations, where you have a competent big man who can operate in the pick-and-roll and also as a lob threat. But the Cavs aren't really utilizing him in that way, and it's just a little weird, and maybe they're still just trying to get acclimated to having him on their roster, and maybe it was the Cavs kind of just getting desperate to make a move for the sake of making a move, and like, you could get a two-time All-Star who somewhat fits into their timeline, even though he's a little bit overpaid at the deadline. Like, I get that move for sure, but at the same time, it just kind of feels weird how the Cavs are utilizing him right now, and I don't know, maybe it's just a comfort thing, but maybe it's also the fact that the Cavs don't really have a true, like, quote-unquote point guard who can help facilitate the rock and move things. So, like, granted, Colin Sexton had 9 assists last night against Miami, and Darius Garland had 4 against Washington and 5 against Miami. And, like, they're able to move the rock a little bit, but they're still young and experienced guards, and maybe there's just, like, a little bit of weirdness with that. But, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, it felt like a weird trade at the time, but maybe they're just kind of, like, maligning him to certain things and like making him so disgruntled with the situation in Cleveland that he opts out, so Cleveland doesn't have to be on the books for the, I think, $28 million that he could be making on that player option next year.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that money. I'll just say that the two things that are, I think, weird for me right now about him is, number one, I think this could just be a tactical thing, but I didn't love how he played against Bam on Saturday. Bam, I think, just was the best player on the floor in that game. And I didn't quite understand why Drummond was defending him so far off of him and just let the cutting just sort of happen over and over again, kind of behind him. And, you know, it didn't really help at all. The other part of it too is, like, I don't know. I don't want to see him and Tristan play together ever again. Like, there's nothing good about that duo. Yeah, like, they maybe can crash offensive boards and do that against bad teams. But you saw against Miami, they tried to station him in the corner, even with Larry on the floor. And the Heat, like, did zone defense to kind of just, like, dare the Caps to funnel the ball there. And then in other situations have playing man, like, had a smaller guy in Drummond, even though Drummond's, like, sitting in the corner. And they're basically saying, like, Caps, pass the ball there. We are comfortable with letting Andre Drummond either drive and we can recover and help and make him turn the ball over, or we'll let him shoot a corner three. And functionally, when you do that, you're basically playing four on five offense. Mm-hmm. And I just don't ever, like, that to me is just a tactical blunder that I just cannot defend in any way. It is frankly, like, insane to me that they would think that works. And some of this is, like, Drummond wants to do more stuff. One of the things coming out of him from Detroit was, like, he wants to pass, he wants to shoot threes or whatever. The best version of Andre Drummond is going to be one that at least most of the time is rim running, dunking, doing a little bit of posting up and crashing the boards. Him in the corner and trying to let him play make is, like, just mistakes waiting to happen. And I think that's why so far, like, when Tristan has been on the floor and he is not, the Cavs have looked better. I have not looked at the mm-hmm. stats on yet, so maybe that's, like, a fallacy that my eyes are telling me. But, like, that's why. Tristan, like, knows what he's doing and is going to play what he's going to do. Drummond is trying to do more. The upside is probably higher, but it's not helping when, like, he's in the corner and you're playing 4-on-5 offense against a really good defense that, even without Jimmy Butler, is just better than you.
Yeah, and it doesn't benefit the young guards, and it doesn't help, because you're right, pick and roll, rim running, length, athleticism, like, all those things that they lack as a team, as a roster, he can kind of hide, but he's got to accept that type of role. I'm okay with the $28 million next year, honestly, if he's going to be a team player that's able to do that, because, again, playing with a talented guy like him, it can be good for these young guards, can be good for whoever you draft in the lottery. That can certainly help. But at the same time, I need you to be bought in. And so I don't know whose call it was, but you're right. I need maybe the occasional Andre Drummond three is fun, you know, and we could do that, yeah. much like a Tristan Thompson three, but it needs to be extremely occasional. And anything outside of that is too much. And I will say one more thing, guys. Just be leery of this, and I know I am. So the Cavs, people are crushing the Cavs, right? And it is a weak, it is a weak free agent class. But don't be shocked here if Dan Gilbert's like, all right, Kobe, we need to get players. So maybe this was part of it. Maybe it's, hey, we're going to make a run at and insert, you know, DeMar DeRozan. I don't think he's going to opt out, but, you know, like, there can be guys that they go after, and that could be kind of scary. So I hope they don't pivot from this rebuild completely and try to, like, be the 8 seed next year by spending a bunch of money, which they still will have money coming off the books, even if Andre Drummond opts in and somehow they keep Kevin around. I still think they'll have a decent amount of money to spend, so we'll see. But I'm kind of leery of that going into this offseason, that Dan's like, all right, hey, get some players because I'm tired of being called a dumpster fire. Let's hide it here for one season.
They've done that before. It resulted in Earl Clark and Jarrett Jack. So, and they traded for Luol Deng and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's
Fred Van Vliet and DeMar DeRozan. Come on down.
Eastern Conference Finals DNA. Championship DNA.
Hey. Apparently, executives think Brandon Ingram isn't worth the max. The Cavs could throw a decent pretty penny at him if New Orleans doesn't want to pay him, and I think I'd be okay with that.
I would max Ingram, but that doesn't mean you're going to be, like, a playoff contender. I would max Ingram, trade Love. Sure, yeah. You know, you can get me on board there. Absolutely.
Yeah. You just be competent there. James, thank you so much we took up a ton of your time on this Sunday, but give everyone a plug about where they can find you online and all the work you're doing.
I will in 1 second. Instead of maxing Ingram, they'll max DeRozan. What do you think about that? Anyway.
I'll just cry a little bit.
The Cavs will be, like, the most unwatchable team I've ever heard of. It'll be like, oh, my God.
Oh my God. I'm just kidding. Oh my God, could you imagine?
Could you imagine just like NBA Twitter would just be like, the Cavs don't exist anymore. We don't acknowledge them. Like, please just like, let's watch the Canton Charge instead. The Canton Charge also had to delay their game today because their neck got ripped down and they couldn't replace it quick enough. So that's just good times in the Cavs organization.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's see, they didn't have a backup net, just like they didn't have a backup plan. Anyways, you can catch me on 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com. Obviously, I cover the Cavs, cover the Indians, cover all three when I'm hosting. And then, as the guys mentioned, the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast, something we do weekly. We haven't recently, but Darren and I will be back at it this week. So plenty going on, obviously, with Indians right around the corner. Obviously, the draft around the corner, and then obviously Cavs season in full swing.
All right, everyone, that's going to be it for this episode. Evan and I will be back after the Cavs play the Heat again. Perhaps we'll go a little better than last time, but we'll be back on Tuesday with more Locked On Cavs. Thanks for listening.